How's everyone doing today? Great. Hello and welcome to this session on streaming in the cloud. We've got all of your options covered here on Azure. There are no shortage of sessions going on here concurrently. Thank you for choosing to come to this one. This is my first time in Atlanta. My name is Sam Chandrasekhar, and I'm a program manager on the Azure Stream Analytics team. And like many of you all over the weekend, I was doing all the touristy things to do here. I was at the CNN Center not very long ago. It reminded me of a tagline CNN used to have some time back that went along the lines of, be the first to know. This really stuck with me, and I was reminded of it today because of its relevance to this specific talk and its relevance to big data processing in general. Large parts of this very symposium and this conference are all about extracting insights from your data. This specific session is about getting to those insights as soon as you possibly can. Time to insight is super critical for businesses, and reducing decision latency, as we like to call it, can help unlock large amounts of business value. The idea here is that the sooner you get to an insight on your data, the sooner you can act on it to unlock business insights. Now, in many cases, these insights could be perishable. There is a window of opportunity when they would be useful and valuable, and if you miss that window, these insights are no longer valuable. And to ensure that you can unlock these insights before that window expires, we have something called stream processing. It is all about asking questions to your data that is moving. The old world was all about getting your data that is streaming out of all of these data exhausts into some form of a static repository. It's what we call data at rest. And then asking questions to that data when it is at rest. Well, guess what? In the new world, if time to insight is critical, you cannot wait for your data to get to rest before you can ask interesting questions on it that will help you unlock insights. So streaming is all about asking questions on data in motion. Now, when we talk about real-time stream processing, there are multiple concepts here, so I'd like to lay the groundwork here before we get started. When we talk about simple event processing, we're talking about single event, single streams, and the kind of operations you're performing there include things like filtering, transformations, enriching the streams, splitting them, and routing things. Event stream processing adds some amount of complexity to that. You can do things like aggregations, have a bunch of rules that you apply to these streams, etc. And the most interesting of them all is complex event processing, where we look for patterns and detect patterns, and we have time windows and temporal windows. We perform joins and correlations across multiple streams that are coming in to unlock predictive insights. Now, let me ask you all a question. If I were to ask you at this very point in time to give me a count of blue cars that are on the streets of Atlanta right now, does anyone have an answer? Well, they're all good answers, but unfortunately, I don't have a clue myself. But let me talk to you about some strategies that you can employ. In the old world, when, you know, batch processing and asking questions on data at rest was the only thing you could do, that the strategy that would map onto is essentially to have all of these cars drained out to some sort of a yard where you count each one, or you look for a blue one and you count all the blue ones. Stream processing, the analogy for stream processing would be that you're looking for blue cars as these cars are moving on the roads. Does that clarify things? Good to know. Let's talk about some scenarios that this can help actualize to actually unlock super important business value. When it comes to these scenarios, there are two broad categories. There are scenarios where you perform stream analytics to get real-time insights, and you essentially help a human take better decisions than they would have been able to in the absence of these insights. So in this category, we have things like live visualizations and real-time dashboards. where people looking at these things can see and seize these insights and take actions to trigger downstream workflows. The other category is one where you get rid of the human element and you automate things end to end, where there is no human. You have a bunch of logic that will look for patterns. It might elicit insights, and based on the specificity of the insight, you can trigger off downstream workflows in a totally automated manner. And I will talk to you and show you demos of actualizing both of those two categories. But at a very high level, the three broad themes are real-time dashboarding, enriching data as you move it from one end to the other, kicking off workflows. When we talk about enriching data and data movement scenarios, large parts of this are based on the premise of a Lambda architecture. Now, you could ask the question, what is a Lambda architecture? If you look at the Greek letter Lambda, it splits into two. There's a single line that splits into two. In many ways, that is representative of what's going on. So if you think of a data exhaust, one or more streams of data that is coming in, you can have a hot path, a stream processing path, where you ask questions on your data that is streaming in real time, and you get certain insights. And you may choose to act on them, or you may choose to ignore them. At the same point in time, if you also route that stream to another static storage entity, such as a database, such as a big data store, so that you can ask questions about it when the data is at rest, and perform batch processing and elicit powerful insights in scenarios where time to insight is not super critical. But that doesn't necessarily mean the insight is not valuable. So to repeat, the idea here is that there's a possibility to actualize a Lambda architecture using the stream processing solution, and that is something that we do as well. More scenario examples. We have cases where we can detect fraud by analyzing streams of data and taking actionable decisions based on this data and actually stopping the transaction before even it fully completes. And this is, we have customers and partners who have actualized this, and in fact, on our website, on the Stream Analytics website, we also have a bunch of examples where you can try out real-time fraud detection. Now, I won't go over each one of these, but I'll select a few and talk about them. The big one that I'd like to draw attention to is predictive maintenance. The promise of the Internet of Things can be actualized from the data that you get from a lot of these things. And the whole idea here is that if you can fix a device before it fails, the total cost of ownership over a sustained duration might be lower than if you let it fail and then fix the device, not accounting for the fact that there'd be downtime incurred and negative business value associated with that. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to switch over to a demo. So I'm going to pull up a Power BI dashboard on my screen. This is showing a bunch of real-time data and visualizing it. So what we're doing is we captured a bunch of aviation data from a public repository, and we're replaying this aviation data as if it were happening in real time. And then we're performing a bunch of processing on it, and one of the outputs is this Power BI dashboard that should be visible now. So one of the things that you'll notice here on this dashboard is the fact that I have an engine diagnosis report. I mean, you might notice that there are certain attributes of this dashboard that are changing as we speak, reflecting the real-time nature of this dashboard. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to click on engine diagnosis report. This is going to zoom in on a specific airplane engine that has been that is being carpet bombed literally with sensors for the purposes of instrumentation. These sensors are feeding in telemetry data in real time to the to a stream processing entity that is trying to make sense of it. So here, this is updating in real time as we speak. I can click on a certain airplane engine part and look for the number of alerts that that have been triggered off for that specific part in near real time. Now, you could ask the question, all right, this is interesting, but how is this useful or actionable? And for that, I will point you to this other tab on this very dashboard that will show you the predicted remaining useful life for this specific airplane engine part. So the idea here is that someone who is in a decision-making position can use this to identify the remaining useful life for this engine. What we're doing under the covers is that we're passing this data through a machine learning model that is performing scoring and making recommendations and giving out information about the predicted useful remaining life. And you can also see how that changes over time. It's a function of the number of alerts that go off for each part. When we look at the Internet of Things, there's a massive disruption that's happening on several fronts, but one big front is business models. We're now seeing device manufacturers divorce themselves from this business of actually selling a device to an end customer. And we're seeing more of devices being sold as a subscription service. Many years back, it would be hard to conceive of things like this. Let's take the specific example of airplane engines. There are vendors out there that are taking advantage of the Internet of Things and selling a bunch of thrust towers to airlines as opposed to the airplane engine itself. And from the perspective of the airline, this gives them a great deal of determinism when it comes to the amount of spend on airplane engines. They don't have to worry about things like maintenance and upkeep and all of those surrounding headaches that may not be a part of their core concern. Coming back, one more of my favorite scenarios is fleet monitoring and connected car scenarios. You can have cars that are streaming out data from their internal instrumentation and telemetry sources to the auto manufacturer, who might be giving them actionable suggestions about route options or the possibility of servicing the cars and things like that. So there is no shortage of scenarios that where stream processing is useful and valuable. And next, what I'd like to transition to is what we can do for you at Microsoft for actualizing some of these scenario possibilities. And to get started with that, I'd like to lay some context around a stream processing pipeline. So if this essentially is the 30,000-foot view of what a stream processing pipeline would look like. To your left, you have a bunch of data exhausts. These could be applications or social media feeds that are streaming out data. This could also be in devices. We all know about the Internet of Things. These could be IP-capable devices that are directly sending data to the cloud, or these could be devices that are connecting to the cloud through a gateway or a hub. Now, on the cloud side, we have event queuing and stream ingestion systems. Out of curiosity, how many of y'all have heard of Apache Kafka? Good to know. What about Event Hub? Good to know. And IoT Hub. Thank you. All of these essentially are low latency message queues that aggregate a whole bunch of events that these data sources are sending to them. Next up in the pipeline, we have the stream processor itself. There are plenty of options, and we'll go over that. And the stream processor, in many cases, can take advantage of reference data, which is data that is seldom changing, or for all practical purposes, constant. This can also call out to machine learning models for the purposes of real-time scoring. And then, when it comes to downstream possibilities, there are three popular options, all three of which we went over. They're archiving for long-term storage and performing batch analytics on that data, or you could visualize that and have a live visualization going on a Power BI dashboard, or you can kick off automated workflows if you want to get the human element out of the loop here. When it comes to Azure, there are really three core services that suffice the needs of streaming. And they're all different, and a large part of this talk is about giving you information on the trade-offs involved with choosing one over the other. Now, at Azure, we're rolling out brand new services as we speak, and each one of these services has a different set of trade-offs associated with that. So a large part of this talk is about empowering you with knowledge of these trade-offs so that you can choose the one that is most appropriate for your use case in your business. So we have Azure Stream Analytics, our first-party fully managed streaming solution. And then we have HD Insight, which is essentially managed Hadoop. We run the Hortonworks distribution for big data processing as a fully managed service, and we call this HD Insight. On HD Insight, we have Storm, aka real-time Hadoop, or we have streaming on top of Spark that you can take advantage of. In addition to these options on Azure, we also have Stream Insight that is a part of SQL Server if you want to run this on-prem or inside a virtual machine yourself. Now, if you look at the streaming stack itself and look at it in the terms of what it would take you to roll out a streaming solution from scratch, you'd have to buy infrastructure, procurement and setup. You'd have to do cluster management, set up all your infrastructure in a cluster, define out the topology, integrate with ingress and egress sources. This might include integrations with machine learning entities. You might have to build in mechanisms for resiliency and high availability. You'd have to build mechanisms to scale this out by scaling a lot of these things is not simple. And you'd want monitoring and troubleshooting solutions. And depending on which option you pick, you may or may not have to do one or more of these things. And that is what I'm going to sort of lay out here on this slide, where I'm essentially showing you a trade-off spectrum. On one end, you have virtual machines on Azure. This is basically infrastructure as a service. You can run whatever you want to inside the virtual machine. And no, sure, we provide you certain primitives for high availability and resiliency and fail-safe operation of these virtual machines, but for all practical purposes, you're on your own. This is the infrastructure that you get. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have Azure Stream Analytics, which is a fully managed streaming solution where all aspects of the things that you saw on the previous slide, you know, all the way from infrastructure procurement and provisioning to cluster management, all the way up to monitoring and troubleshooting, is taken care of for you and offered as a fully managed package service. In between, we have the HD Insight solutions. This includes Spark Streaming and Storm. Now, there are certainly lots of technical differences between Storm and Spark Streaming, but when it comes to the granularity at which you interact with these services, it is, for all practical purposes, nearly identical. For example, you know, if you want to scale out your Spark Streaming or Storm deployment on HD Insight, you would be dealing with things in the granularity of clusters and nodes. So to scale out further, you'd have to add another node. A node is essentially a virtual machine. Let me switch over to the Azure portal. Yep, there it comes up. And here, what I'm showing you, and I won't spend too much time on this, but what I'm showing you is the Azure portal view for HD Insight. Specifically, I'm running a Storm job here on HD Insight. And if I go click on scale, I have a cluster that I'd already set up. But if I go click on scale, what you see is I have the ability to add things like nodes. And a node is effectively a virtual machine. So that, you know, that is the granularity at which we're dealing with. Now, cluster management and some of those operations are taken care of for you, but things like scaling out is at a much lower granularity. And that is the point that I'd like to make. Some more about Apache Storm on HD Insight. Now, I don't want to beat down on the service at all. That's not the intention. I want to point out the right trade-offs that were made. Now, when it comes to HD Insight and Storm on HD Insight, what we're doing is we're running the Hortonworks distribution of Hadoop, and we are guaranteeing, as Microsoft, an SLA of 3 nines of availability. We also have seamless mechanisms to scale up and scale down. Again, you're dealing with the currency of adding nodes to a cluster. We also have deep integrations with Azure ingestion, ingress and egress sources, and syncs. We also provide you the ability to author and articulate your topology using either Java or C Sharp. In addition, you know, we also have a rich Visual Studio experience where you can do debugging, monitoring, troubleshooting. You can manage and deploy out your topologies, and it's fully integrated with the Azure portal experience like we just saw. Here's a technical comparison of the three options in terms of the strictest guarantee that they can provide. Some of this gets into a lot of details. We'll explore some of this later, but I wanted to put this out there to also capture some of the technical comparisons. If you want, you know, exactly once processing, then Azure Stream Analytics might not be the right solution. There are very few scenarios where, you know, exactly once processing is, or the lack of it is a deal breaker, but they could exist. And I want to be upfront about these trade-offs and the possibilities here. Spark Streaming, at least in the variant that currently exists on HD Insight, is a micro-batching system. It's not an event-by-event processing system. And, you know, there are pros and cons associated with that approach, and I want to call that out as well. Essentially, if you look at it, there are trade-offs being made here in the latency and the throughput spectrum. Some systems are trying to optimize for throughput, while others are trying to optimize for latency, and then there's the option of adding things like, say, Trident on Storm to move the needle on that spectrum based on what you'd like to do. Next up, I want to spend a lot of time talking about Azure Stream Analytics. You know, there are some key differentiators when it comes to Stream Analytics, and you'll notice the most important differentiator on the right-hand side of the screen here. If I want to roll out some logic, in this case, it's a simple use case with some filtering operations, with some projection operations, and with some temporal separation logic. And for that, I needed to roll out close to 2,000 lines of Java code using Apache Storm. The same thing can be done in Azure Stream Analytics with 3 lines of SQL-like statements. And this essentially highlights the key value proposition that we're going after, which is programmer productivity. We have a declarative SQL-like language with built-in temporal semantics. And we'll get into the details of the temporal semantics and all of these windowing functions that we natively support in a little bit. But I want you to keep in mind that this is the core motivation behind Azure Stream Analytics. We're a fully managed Azure service. We take care of most things for you. And even when it comes to articulating out your query processing logic, we go the extra mile in trying to ensure that you are as productive as you could be through our offering of a SQL-like query language with built-in temporal semantics. By virtue of this being a fully managed service, a lot of the internal configurations and details are abstracted from you, and it is super easy to get started. It is super simple to get started, and you can do things like build out real-time dashboards, the nature that I showed you, in a matter of minutes. Well, actually, that one would take slightly longer, but you get the idea. And those first two points essentially translate to the lowest total cost of ownership because you don't have to worry about adding nodes to your cluster and scaling them out. You don't have to worry about... Let me ask you a question. How many of y'all are Java programmers? All right, well, this is the Microsoft conference, so that's not surprising. What about Scala programmers? Good to know. And how many of y'all know SQL? Fantastic. For the folks watching on video, that's nearly all of the room. Well, almost. So this is by virtue of Azure Stream Analytics being a fully managed service, you know, a lot of the underlying details are taken care of. So things like operational costs and personal costs are you'll see a lot of savings there compared to Apache Storm or Spark Streaming on HD Insight. Now, having said that, there are things that you could possibly do with those solutions that might be harder with Stream Analytics, but it's a trade-off spectrum at the end of the day. With Stream Analytics, you get a bunch of powerful analytics tools using that take advantage of SQL-like constructs. So what we've done is we've taken the SQL language and we have added our own enhancements that are most applicable for streaming scenarios. And most of these are in the domain of temporal logic. We have temporal functions, temporal windows, like hopping windows, sliding windows, tumbling windows, and we'll get into the details of that, as well as a whole bunch of aggregation logic. We also have a point there about geospatial functions that I'm going to announce and show you a demo of, so stay tuned. By virtue of this being a fully managed service, we have an enterprise-grade SLA here, just like HD Insight, 3 nines of availability. In addition, to ensure business continuity, even when things go wrong under the covers, we have an automated checkpointing and fast restart logic that essentially ensures that there is no data loss under the covers. And this is also related to the fact that we guarantee at least once delivery semantics. This is available in a lot of Azure regions, and we're only expanding out as we speak, including China and Germany, where special stipulations apply. When it comes to checking off all of the compliance checkboxes, it's a growing list for us, and at this very point in time, the list looks like this. I do not really know too much about the specifics of these, but they're super important. I know that for sure. Now, going to the capabilities of a Stream Analytics job, the core parts of a Stream Analytics job are really simple. I mean, there's a job definition and a whole bunch of logic to specify out-of-order, late-order policies, but if we were to ignore that for the time being, there are inputs, there are outputs, and then there is query processing logic that lies in between. Now, to illustrate the capabilities, what I will do is that I will pick out a scenario, and the specific scenario that I'm picking out here is one of a toll booth. Now, we were talking about counting blue cars in the streets of Atlanta. Now, let's assume that we have a toll booth set up on some of these highways, and each toll booth has two sensors, a sensor at the entry and a sensor at the exit of the toll booth, and there is one toll booth per lane, and let's say the sample data, that these toll booths are sending out looks like what you see here. there is an entry stream. And toll ID essentially refers to what lane the toll booth is in, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And then there's a bunch of data associated with the car itself, license plate, state of registration, model, make, etc. There's also the entry time itself, the time at which this car entered the toll booth. And similarly, there's also another sensor at the exit. We can imagine this to be an RFID sensor that's looking at RFID information that is a sticker on your car, or maybe it's in the license plate itself. That's less important. But what I'd like to draw attention to here is the fact that we have a reference data database. We also have a commercial vehicle registration database that is not some data, and this is not data that is being sent to us from the toll booth, but this is a static, seldom changing database. I mean, if you think about it, registration databases don't change as often, but the streams of data coming in from a data exhaust such as a toll booth is changing all the time. And I want you to keep this in mind, that we'll call this reference data, and it is super important and it's super useful in a whole bunch of scenarios that we'll get to in just a little bit, but I want to draw attention to that here. Now, since this is a stream processing system and we're dealing with things at the currency of events, there's a timestamp associated with each event. Now, by default in our system, what we do is that we look for the NQ time of this event into one of our ingestion sources. That could be Event Hub or IoT Hub. Or what you could do is that you could specify custom behavior where you can pick out an attribute of the data payload itself and tell the system to use that specific attribute as the timestamp of interest for downstream query processing. And for that purpose, you'd use the timestamp by keyword. I'm going to go over a whole bunch of examples, and you'll notice this timestamp by keyword. So in this specific case, in this entry stream, you'll notice that there's a column called entry time. Now, that is more interesting to us for computation logic, such as looking at the amount of time that a specific vehicle spent inside the toll booth, as opposed to the NQ time for the corresponding event into Event Hub or IoT Hub based on what was used. Now, by the way, this very example that I'm going to go over is something that you can try out yourself. We have samples. We have all of this published on GitHub, and we have a self-service walkthrough guide on the Azure Stream Analytics documentation page. Now, I could show you a lot of this, but in the interest of time, to ensure that we cover as much material as we can, I will not show you this actually working. We'll go over some other fun examples and demos that'll hopefully be things that you'll find compelling. Now, since this is SQL that we're talking about, filtering and projection are common scenarios. Out of curiosity, how many of y'all... Well, you already told me that most of you all know SQL. So is this self-explanatory to you? OK, good to know. In which case, I will not spend too much detail into this. But the whole idea here is that I have a bunch of rules. I have a bunch of conditions based on which I want to filter out stuff. And that is what this query is doing. You'll notice that there are a whole bunch of conditions where I'm saying where the state is California or Washington, and the weight of the vehicle is lower than a threshold, et cetera, and then based on that, I output some data. Now, joins. Now, if you all know SQL, then you'll surely be familiar with the concept of joins as well. The idea here is that you can bring in data from multiple streams of data, not static sources, but streams of data, and join them based on a condition. And since this is a join on data in motion, there's a time component involved as well. And that is something that you'll notice is articulated using the date diff function right there, where I'm saying perform a join on two streams, the input stream and the output stream, and do that in this time window of 15 minutes. As you all might have seen, the purpose of this query is to find the time in seconds required for vehicles to pass through the toll booth itself. And then we want to report out this time itself. So the idea here is we're taking two separate streams, we're joining them on a criteria. In this case, the criteria is that the toll ID, which is, we're talking about the same toll booth, and we're talking about the same car or vehicle, so we're talking about the license plate that was read at both the, we're looking at the license plate that was read at both the entry as well as the exit streams, the two sensors in this toll booth. And for everything that meets that criteria within that given time window, we are reporting the time it took, the amount of time spent by that vehicle in that toll booth, and for that we're using the dateDiff function again, but this time in the select statement for subtracting out the final and the beginning time to get the difference. Any questions? Is this clear to everyone? Good to know. All right. Another functionality that we have is called left outer join. Again, if you're familiar with SQL, this should not be alien to you. However, it is, what I will point out is that this is super useful in streaming scenarios for doing things like detecting patterns. And in this case, the pattern that I'm interested in is cars that have entered the toll booth but have not exited within 5 minutes. And you'll notice that in the final where clause, I'm checking for a null. And I'm looking for the absence of certain data. I'm looking for the absence of an indication that something that entered the toll booth did not get out. And that is what I'm looking for, and that is what I'm reporting on. And the left outer join gives me the ability to do that. Next up, windowing concepts. Since temporal semantics and temporal logic is such a core part of the Azure Stream Analytics SQL-like query language, we call it SAQL, Stream Analytics Query Language. Windowing functions are built in. We have three windowing functions, sliding, tumbling, and hopping. An output is produced at the end of each window, and it's used in the group by clause in your SQL query. In this pictorial representation that you see on the screen, I'm performing some aggregation logic. I'm running an aggregation function that would sum up the value of events in a specific time window between two time ticks here. And I'm getting an output at the expiry of each window. Now, this is called a tumbling window. And what you see here is another example of this. And you notice that in the query, that in the group by, along with the group by statement, you have a function called tumbling window, and you have a mechanism to stipulate the length of that window. Now, this window repeats on end, and it's a fixed size. So in this specific case, I can use it to answer questions along the lines of, every 10 seconds, give me the count of vehicles entering each toll booth over the last 10 seconds. So the idea here is, over the last 10 seconds, I want a count of the number of vehicles that entered a specific toll booth, and I want that result every 10 seconds. And this is what a tumbling window gives me. And let me know if there are questions here, but hopefully that pictorial representation should make things sufficiently clear. Now, let's say I want to ask the same question. That is, give me a count of vehicles entering the toll booth in the last 10 seconds, but I want to ask this question at an increased frequency. Let's say if I want to double the frequency, and I want an output every 5 seconds, I would use another window that we call the hopping window. As you can see, there is an overlapping component here. Events could belong to multiple windows. And the syntax is very similar. In the group by clause, along with the group by clause, you'd use hopping window as opposed to tumbling window, and then there are two parameters. One is the length of the window, and the other one is the length of the hop itself. And here I can get an answer to the same question that I was asking at a much more rapid cadence if I choose to do that. Now, another kind of window that we have is a sliding window. Now, this is super interesting. The reason it's interesting is because this will enable you to look for patterns around a specific event. You can have an event, and then you can look around it for patterns. Let's say, in this case, we want to look at toll booths that have served more than 10 vehicles in the last 20 seconds. It's a fairly complex question. And think of the amount of time and effort and lines of code it would take you to implement something like this in Java or C Sharp or Scala, for instance. With stream analytics, it is what you see right there, 4 lines of SQL statements. And you can do that by taking advantage of a sliding window. With the sliding window, what happens is under the covers, we create a window of the size that you stipulate, in this case 20 seconds, that is constantly moving by a small amount, a small epsilon. And every time an event either enters or leaves the system, an output is generated. So if you look at that example, you could have multiple events, you can have the same event be a part of multiple windows, but every time it enters or leaves a window, an output is generated. And that's what this is all about. Super useful for pattern recognition. Any questions? Is that clear? Good to know. Next up, I want to talk to you about custom code. This is brand new functionality that I'm announcing at this specific conference. Never before has this been seen or shown outside of Microsoft. Now, for whatever reason, if the expressiveness of the SQL-like query language and the inbuilt semantics and aggregation and processing logic that is in the Stream Analytics query language does not suffice your needs, you have the ability to write custom code to have user-defined functions, for instance. And that is what I'm announcing today. We are starting off with JavaScript first. And we hope this will be super useful for you. Again, JavaScript doesn't represent the be-all and end-all in terms of our language support. This is something that we're starting off with out of the gate. The idea here is that you can author user-defined functions using custom code in JavaScript. You see lots of example use cases. There are existing artifacts written in JavaScript that will help you with a great deal of ease to do string parsing and manipulation and array operations and regular expressions and math operations and date and time operations and things like that. I'll also call out attention to certain restrictions. This is, we explicitly restrict certain functionality. You can't call out to external REST endpoints. Reference data pulls from this user-defined function is restricted. You can't write custom aggregations, not at this time at least. Custom event format serializations or deserializations are not allowed for the time being. This functionality is in private preview. If you want access to this, come talk to me, and I'm happy to unlock it for your Azure subscription. Or feel free to send me email as well. I'll share out my contact information at the end of the talk. Here's an example of how to use it. Again, super intuitive and easy to use in the query itself. It looks like a function call. On the right, you'll notice that there's a bunch of metadata, that there is some description logic that'll have to be supplied beforehand to let the system know what this user-defined function is doing, and some additional details there in addition to specifying the function itself. And you can readily use it from your from your query. In this case, I'm performing a simple operation. I'm doing a hex to int. Next up, reference data. We spoke about this earlier while talking about the toll booth example. There was some vehicle registration data that, for all practical purposes, was static data that was seldom changing data. Now, you can use such data sources to join with incoming streams. And it is super useful to save the amount of data that you send in your stream itself. For instance, you could have some encoded logic. Let's say you're sending some employee information, for instance. EMP01 or something like that, or EMP02 would identify specific employees, but you can join that with reference data where you can have additional details such as their name, their address, things like that. And this is what reference data does. It is, now, good questions. With reference data, you can actually set the frequency at which a refresh is done. So while it is true that this is seldom changing data, it is also true that this event that is rare can actually happen. And to account for that, there is the ability to set a cadence at which reference data refreshes are done. So we certainly do not recommend that you use reference data for things like frequently changing stuff. But if stuff does change, there is the ability to set a cadence at which a refresh is done, or you check for changes. Under the covers, we do that too. If you don't set anything, so that takes care of that. To illustrate an example use case for reference data, going back to the scenario that I was talking about earlier, if you want to report all vehicles that entered the toll booth with expired license plates, the license plate registration data is reference data that you can join with. You know, you can conceive of scenarios where, if this is the case, then send a mail or send an email to the person. Again, that is not information that you're getting from the stream, but you're able to join and correlate not just two separate streams, but you're also able to correlate a stream with reference data logic, by performing a join on a specific condition. In this case, the condition is that the license plate ID ought to be the same. And in the reference data table, I'm looking for whether the plate itself has expired. And in this case, if it has expired, then I can kick off some downstream workflows. Hopefully not be trying too nasty to the person who is driving around with an expired plate. Next up, streaming units and scalability. Now, you know, in services like Apache Storm, offered as a service on HD Insight, you're dealing with things such as virtual machines that you're adding as a node to a cluster. With Stream Analytics, because we're a fully managed service, we abstract out details of that nature, and what we expose is this notion of a streaming unit. This represents the compute footprint, CPU and memory mostly, associated with a Stream Analytics job. You can seamlessly add and remove streaming units from your job based on its footprint. Streaming units are also a parameter that we use for our pricing. So the takeaway is that the footprint of your job represents a streaming unit that you can add and remove for scalability. Another concept related to scalability is partitions. You can perform parallel execution over scaled out resources. To talk about this better, I'd like to take a step back, and if we were to look at Event Hub or IoT Hub, these ingestion queues offer this notion of a partition, and it's possible to specify logic that enables certain sources or data from certain sources to go to specific partitions. So it is possible to have logic that would have some sort of a mapping between, say, a source ID, it could be a device ID if we're talking about an IoT scenario, and a partition ID. Now, downstream in stream analytics, what we can do is we can deploy the same instance of the query to all of those partitions. And we can do that using this keyword called partition by. In this specific example, let's assume this is the toll booth example. Let's say red represents trucks, blue represents cars, and black represents motorbikes. And let's say there's a stipulation that trucks can only go to a specific toll booth, cars go to a specific toll booth, and motorcycles go to a specific toll booth. What you could do is, if you're using Event Hub, the same thing is true with IoT Hub too, is that you can have logic that stipulates that a specific toll booth, which you can think of as a specific device, would send data to a specific Event Hub partition. In this case, you know, with names such as partition ID, or with identifiers such as partition ID 1, 2, 3, etc. And then what you can do is that you can have your query, your stream analytics query, deployed out, the identical version of the query deployed out to each one of these partitions. And effectively what you get is an increased throughput based on your scenario, because you can parallelize out your resources. So you don't have to process things serially, but you can parallelize them out, thus taking advantage of your streaming unit allocations. Another important concept is out of order and late arriving events. You can, under the covers with stream analytics, what we do is that we have this buffer that we call a reorder buffer. So every time there's a window, a temporal window, we open out a buffer in memory and we're waiting for events. Now it's possible that events arrive out of order. The default behavior is that we wait for events to arrive and then we sort them based on an order and then we generate an output by applying the processing logic. It is possible that events arrive out of order, or in many cases, events could arrive late because you could have networking delays and clock skews and things like that. This is also a stellar example of how we respond to customer feedback. This specific feature was a customer request. We did not have it, and we were all over that. We acted quickly, and boom, very soon we had this functionality. Coming back to the functionality itself, you can specify rules to deal with late arriving as well as out of ordered events. For example, you can say things like, if my event is late by a certain threshold amount, say 5 minutes, I'm going to drop it. If it's late by more than 5 minutes, you say goodbye. Sorry, we cannot process you in dispatch at least. Or what you could do is you can choose to adjust it. You can adjust it to a value, to the value of the latest event or the oldest event in that very buffer and things like that. And essentially, this is a screenshot of the view that we have in our UI to articulate this, and it's fairly self-explanatory in terms of the things that you can do. So that is what out of order and late arriving events are about. Next up, machine learning integration. There are some who argue that, well, you're not analytics unless you do machine learning. Well, guess what? We do machine learning. You can have a machine learning endpoint set up with Azure Machine Learning and call it from Stream Analytics. Now, I've been talking for a long time. I want to take a break and show you a demo. So for this demo, what I will do is that I will pull up an event generator. And this event generator is essentially pulling Twitter information. Before most of you arrived, I took a poll of the folks in the room and asked them for a certain hashtag that I could look for that would be sufficiently trending on Twitter. They all chose debate. Actually, they chose other things, but you know, I sort of rounded that off to debate because, hey, we don't want contentious stuff here. We all know what the debates were about. So I am pulling in live Twitter data from Twitter using the Twitter API, everything associated with the hashtag debate. And what I'm doing is I'm passing it through a stream analytics job. And what you see on your screen is the exact job that represents the query in the job. So you'll notice something called sentiment. That is a callout. It's a function callout, just like the JavaScript user-defined function callout. This is calling out to an Azure machine learning model that I've actualized and associated with this friendly name in the Stream Analytics UX. And what I'm also doing in the actual query itself is that I'm outputting it to a Power BI dashboard. So if I go here, this is a Power BI dashboard that is giving me a visual representation of the sentiments associated with the tweets that I'm pulling in near real time. And you'll notice that this dashboard is also updating every time there is new Twitter data coming in. And looks like negative is unfortunately the largest, you know, area in this larger area. It turns out that our model thinks that most tweets that we pulled in the duration of this talk were all negative. Hopefully, you all can get on Twitter and change that. But you get the idea. This is updating in near real time. I'm pulling in data from Twitter, and this is going out and updating as we speak. I'm going to kill this for a second and switch over to my slide deck again. Now, we spoke about connected car scenarios for a little bit. For the first time, I am announcing geospatial capabilities in Azure Stream Analytics available as a private preview. If you want access to this, come talk to me or send me email. I'll share out my contact information on the slides. We'll unlock geospatial capabilities. So this is super important for telematics, fleet management, asset tracking, all sorts of connected car scenarios. We have multiple partners who have deployed this functionality into production already, essentially eliciting data and GPS data from cars. When we talk about streaming data, geolocation data from GPS-enabled devices is a huge part. Literally everything today has a GPS sensor. And geospatial functions is intended to help you unlock possibilities and insights that are hidden in GPS data. We're starting off with these primitives that you see. We have mechanisms to create points, to create polygons. These can essentially give you a geo-fenced area that you can use. We have things like you can compute the distance, you can see if an area is within another area, you can ask questions such as, does this polygon, does this area overlap with this other area? Do these two lines intersect? Will they potentially intersect? Things like that. What we've also done is since we output to Power BI dashboards, we have integrations with Power BI, and Power BI supports Bing Maps. It unlocks a whole bunch of possibilities with Bing Maps. I can ask questions on GPS data in real time and join that and combine that with things like weather data and unlock powerful possibilities. For instance, a common scenario is a geofencing scenario. You can say if there's a specific tool attached to it and it has a GPS sensor, if a tool leaves a geofenced area, it refuses to work because it fails an attestation check. You can say things like, all right, if you're a car manufacturer, you can generate events that alert the driver to direct the car towards a gas station if the fuel level is below a certain threshold and a gas station that is favorable is within a certain radius. We have people who are implementing scenarios such as, let's say if more than 10 cars perform a hazardous braking operation at a specific intersection, we're alerted of that. And what we also can do is we can send out alerts to all other drivers within a certain area of that specific potentially hazardous intersection about the possibility of hazardous driving conditions in that section of roadway. So just, and you know, I have a few more examples here on the screen, some of which combine weather data with GPS data, and there are lots of unique possibilities that you can unlock, especially because of integrations with Bing Maps in Power BI. Now, I'm going to show you a demo. This is a demo for geospatial data. So what I have here is two event generators. I'm just checking if they're working. They seem to be generating events. What they're doing is that we captured a bunch of GPS data associated with trucks and the location of trucks. And we are essentially replaying that data as if it was streaming in real time. And what I'm going to do is, A, I'm going to show you this data visualized on a live dashboard. And in addition, I'm going to ask questions about this data that is coming in. Not just this data, but I'll also be joining it with a bunch of weather data and give you and show you the possibilities here. So I have Bing Maps. I have a bunch of data that is flowing in. So what I'll show you is I have this. Oops, I guess you weren't seeing that. So here I have Bing Maps loaded up. And this is essentially a fleet monitoring demo. Like I was mentioning, we had captured the GPS coordinates of a lot of vehicle movements, and now I'm playing that out using my event generator as if they were happening in real time. And I can overlay those things on a map, and every toggle that I have here in this demo essentially kicks off an Azure Stream Analytics query under the covers, so that enables me to ask specific questions about data that is streaming in near real time, and get answers in near real time too. So what I'm going to do is I will zoom in on some of these vehicles to show you that they're actually moving and they're not just pinpoint sitting there. So I'm zooming in into California. Let's pick a truck. Let's pick truck number 10. Zooming in further. Let me know that you confirm that this truck is actually moving as we see. Well, it looks like it has stopped. As you see, it just moved. So this is a moving truck. It's moving as we speak. Now, zooming out, we have plenty of such trucks moving around about, some in Alaska as well. So I'm going to ask the question, show me all trucks that are in the state of Colorado, that are within the boundaries of the state of Colorado. And boom, there, one shows up. Again, what's happening here is that a stream analytics query is being kicked off under the covers. I have a polygon, which is a geofence around the state of Colorado, and I'm asking the question, give me, is this point within this geofence? And if the answer is yes, it gets displayed. So right now here it looks like toggles, but I want you to know that under the covers it's an Azure Stream Analytics query. In the interest of time, I won't pull up the query itself, but if you have questions, come talk to me offline and I'll show you the query. Also, honest admission, the reason we chose Colorado is because if you look at the state of Colorado, the boundaries of it are basically intersecting straight lines. So it's very easy to model by drawing out a polygon as opposed to some of the other states. We also have a bunch of weather information. So So I'm going to kick off the weather layer, and this is going to lazy load a bunch of weather data for each state. You'll notice that now it's streaming in as we speak. The first time it takes a while in this demo, but the shade of pink or red that you see for that specific state is representative of how warm it is there. Now, if I ask the question, and pardon my use of temperature unit here, if I ask the question, show me all trucks that are in areas with below a certain temperature threshold. Oops. And we can leave that on and give it a moment or two. See, we see data streaming in the northeast. It is lower than that temperature, so or it is in that temperature range, we're getting an answer. So the idea here is I'm joining weather data and GPS data and asking geospatial questions of my data, and I'm getting answers. So this is geospatial functions in stream analytics that we're announcing at this very symposium. This functionality is in private preview. Come talk to me, and we're happy to unlock it for your Azure subscription. We also have a page on the internet in the stream analytics documentation site where you can go request for this as well. It would be easier if you drop your email address in your Azure subscription or send me an email. I'll share my email out in a little bit. Monitoring and troubleshooting. It is a super important part of any streaming solution or any service for that matter, any cloud-hosted service. What we have right now is the capability to provide you metrics for your stream analytics jobs at a job-level granularity. You might have noticed on the Azure portal, you can visualize it and you can chart it and all of that. There's also the ability to generate metrics and alarms you can generate alerts and alarms on the metrics based on a certain criteria. So you can have, say, an email sent if a metric reaches a certain threshold. However, our customers told us that stream analytics is insufficient when it comes to capabilities for performing self-service troubleshooting, especially in advanced scenarios. If you want to debug a job, let's say a job is not outputting data for whatever reason, and you want to localize the source of the issue, we did not have an effective solution. And again, what I'm announcing right now is functionality that is in private preview, that has not been shown at any public forum before, which is this notion of a job diagram with metrics. And to illustrate this better, I will bring up my Azure portal where I'll show you this for a job that I have running. So in this job, I pulled up a sample job. So this is a job with one input and two outputs, as you noticed. There's a query associated with this job. What I'm going to do is I will close this out. And in the settings pane, you will notice something called job diagram. This is a pictorial representation of your stream analytics job. There are also a bunch of color codes that represent the health of specific parts and components. In addition, clicking on each one of these boxes, by the way, each one of these boxes for the query itself represents a query step. So if you have used the with keyword and partitioned out your query into steps, every box here would represent one specific step. In addition, we have inputs and outputs. For example, Event Hub has multiple partitions. Guess what? I can expand out these partitions and get a zoomed out view, a zoomed in view of what's going on. In addition, when data is flowing through, I can click on every specific partition or step of a query and get metrics for that step. Pardon me, in the interest of time, I will not start the event generator. It'll take a while for the events to start flowing through. But you notice this bottom pane here, that's where you see metrics. So if you notice that a job is not producing outputs for whatever reason, what you can do is that you can work backwards and see at what query step you're getting inputs and no outputs. And perhaps you can localize that to be the source of the problem and spend some time troubleshooting and debugging that, as opposed to, it gives you a good launching point for that. Let me not talk about the as opposed to case because it's not pretty. In addition, if you want to view your query itself that corresponds to that specific part, there's a way to do that. You click on the ellipsis, they show properties. There's the query section corresponding to that specific part of the query represented by that box. Again, we have color codes to represent health status and things like that. And this continues to be a big area of investment. We're eager for your feedback. This functionality is also in private preview. We're happy to unlock it for all of your subscriptions and accounts. Come talk to me. Moving back. Interacting with Stream Analytics, there are different modalities. You can use the Azure portal, the old as well as the new. By the way, the new portal now has parity with the old one. We have mechanisms with PowerShell. We have a .NET SDK. We have REST APIs, et cetera. I want to very quickly walk you through customer stories. We have Honeywell, who's doing building monitoring, an IoT scenario using Stream Analytics. We have Aerocrine, a Swedish medical device company. This is a fascinating use case where there is this device and you can blow into the device and based on certain attributes of your breath, it'll tell you about whether you have asthma or not. And there are certain sensors in these devices that we monitor with Stream Analytics so that any changes can be offsetted appropriately. I will not get into the details in the interest of time, but we do have a published case study, and I encourage you all to go look at it. Fujitsu has very innovative use cases around controlled farming, where in sections of their clean rooms, they grow and produce lettuce that has a certain amount of potassium, and this is so that it can be consumed by dialysis patients and people with kidney disorders. And to ensure that this happens, again, this is an IoT use case where they have a bunch of sensors and actuators that is looking for different conditions, temperature, humidity, and so on. And they're monitoring this with Stream Analytics and kicking off workflows when things hit thresholds so that things can be carefully monitored and proportional changes can be made in this controlled environment to grow this lettuce. Thank you. We're out of time. There's plenty more to talk about. The other thing that I wanted to mention is in this very conference center, some of the elevators are provided by ThyssenKrupp, who's also a customer of ours. They use Stream Analytics for the purposes of predictive and preemptive maintenance on their elevators. Thank you for attending. samacha@microsoft.com is my email address. Feel free to send me email. I encourage you all to try out Stream Analytics and all of the streaming possibilities on Azure. If you have questions, feedback, feel free to let me know. Additionally, and more importantly, if you want access to some of the functionality that I showcased here that is in private preview, namely geospatial functions, the job diagram, as well as JavaScript, user-defined function support for custom code, send me email, and I'm happy to unlock it for your Azure subscription. Thank you so much, folks.